Like, for instance, your guest who is supposed to show up at noon shows up real early. Omar Vizquel, already here in the building. He's going to join us momentarily right here on Baskin and Phelps. So we're not going to have the pleasant introductions. You know, we're going to just like say, hi-o, good to see you after all these years, right here live on the radio. Baskin's out getting Omar right now. He was walking up through the building. We did have a security guy help him over here, which was good.
Yeah, extremely kind. We're appreciative of that person.
That's very, very nice. I'm Jeff Phelps. That was Dan Menigan. And Omar is walking into the studio as we speak.
The man of the hour.
Omar's really early. Omar, come on over here. Here's your microphone and your headsets and everything else. Omar, Jeff Phelps, good to see you again. How are you, buddy? Andy Baskin sitting back down. Look at Andy got a nice haircut. Did you see that, O? Look at that.
That's what happens when you are our age.
Remember all that hair he used to have? He cut it all off.
Look at those shoes. Look at the shoes he's wearing.
Those are weird shoes, Omar. There you go. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear, yes.
Pull that microphone down in front of your mouth.
There you go.
There you go. Say hey.
Hello.
There, that works. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Real good to have you with us.
How was this weekend? How was the National?
Yeah, you were out at the big
It was
big
busy, man. It was very busy, but it was great. Get to see a lot of old-timers that I haven't seen in a while.
Who'd you see? I know you ran into Carlos over the weekend.
How was that? Carlos I see often, but I saw Ricky Henderson, Steve Carlton, Dave Winfield. I saw Tony Perez, Big Papi, Pedro Martinez, Mariano Rivera. It's a huge lineup.
Arthur Rhodes, was he there? I'm just kidding.
No, Arthur. I didn't see Arthur.
Wow, he went there. He went there already.
I wanted to feel at home. I wanted to relax.
Jose Mesa wasn't there.
Oh, wow. You went there. Wow. Man, I feel left out. I don't have a good one.
You'll be okay.
That's great. Before we get into anything else, I want to share something with folks who are listening. And I might have mentioned this on the show before, but when Andy and I were doing the pregame show together, there were two guys that always stood out to me because two guys did things differently than every other major leaguer I've ever dealt with. One was Kevin Millwood, because you're not supposed to talk to the starting pitcher, right? When he's pitching, especially as TV doofs, you don't talk to that guy.
Yeah.
Kevin would come walking out of the tunnel wearing flip-flops, wearing shorts and a jersey, carrying a cup of coffee. Hey, guys, how you doing? It's good to see you. And it's like, I even said, hey, Kevin, you're pitching today. You're not supposed to be. Yeah, I know. This is what I do. And he would come out and relax and just, like, hang out. And you did it almost every
day.
You were the first guy out of the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And you would come out and sit. And you wouldn't, like, hang with us. But sometimes you would. You know, because we'd be in there working and our crew and everything else. And you would just come out and sit down and shoot the breeze and just kind of relax. Why did that work for you when most major league ball players wanted nothing to do with coming out and talking to people who weren't specifically major league ball players or coaches?
I had a coach when I was growing up that said, the only way that you can get a raise is like if you are in the ball game, at the ballpark, in the ball field. You don't get a raise in the clubhouse. Usually you waste a lot of time in the clubhouse. Guys play cards. They have massages. They look at video. But if you are on the field and you are where you're supposed to be, I think it's the best way for you to hang out and, share stories with people. And reporters are there, and we can talk about different things that are going on during that week. So, for me, it was a better way to relax, to be outside, than to be inside in the clubhouse.
Did you do that your whole career?
Yeah, most of it.
Did you?
I think I was the only guy that shagged the whole BP, the four groups during BP, shagged balls in the outfielders, hang out with people in the outfield and, just stay on the field as much as possible. And people say, no, just take BP and go inside. No, I don't like it like that. I know a lot of guys like to take a shower before the game and all that stuff, but I like to stay the same way and sweat it out.
Hmm. This is like something I just never asked you, and I always thought about it. You're in between inning rituals. I mean, it was more and like it was must watch from a fan perspective as much as it was during the game to watch you take ground balls in between innings. Mm. Where did that start? And just was that just relaxing, or it was so much fun to watch?
It's just part of your routine because you know those ground balls, believe it or not, they get you into position where you're gonna be fielding ground balls during the game. And if you fool around during those warm-ups and you're not ready for the ground ball that is supposed to hit you during the game, then you're not doing anything. I believe that it's you're supposed to get like 3 or 4 ground balls. You get a backhand. You set your feet, make a good throw to first base, and go on the other way and do the same thing, and maybe even turn a double play. So if you're ready in between those innings and you do that routine, then when there is a game time, you don't supposed to miss anything.
You know, over the years, you know, people will ask me about seeing different things, you know, the through my work and everything. One story that I've always told was being able at spring training, and it was in Winter Haven at the time. Mm-hmm. And I said one of my favorite memories ever at spring training was watching you and John McDonald take ground balls together, because I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, and you're just talking about how, you know, you put the real effort into taking ground balls. It was unbelievable because some guys in spring training, you know, you're just trying to get some work in. You and John had the quickest hands. And if yours were quicker than John's, then the next play, his looked quicker than yours. I mean, he was really good too.
Yeah.
And I would think, first of all, that had to be a nice kind of internal competition because John was really good. But can you learn that, Omar? Or is that just born in a guy like you, in a guy like John McDonald, where you have those kind of hands and can play that kind of defense?
Well, I always believe that you're born with some kind of abilities that, you know, you are like a raw stone and, you know, you put on the field. And yes, you do have some good hands, good abilities. But then you start talking to other people that you know, get also the same kind of talent. And then you realize that everybody got different techniques and ways to think when you're taking a ground ball and when you're making a play. So sometime, you know, Johnny Mac asks a lot of questions. And that's why he is as good as anybody. Right now, he's a teacher. You know, he's teaching in the Little Leagues here with the Guardians. And you can tell that he was all into it. He wanted to learn more from the guys that he had around. Obviously, he didn't have the chance to play every day because of me, because of Robbie, because of all the people they brought in front of him. But he was a great learner of the game. And, you know, that's why he's as good as he is right now. And it is a pleasure to take a ground ball with Johnny. Johnny, he a different way, different way of thinking. We have our Latino way of thinking, ground balls fluently. And he has his way that he learned through his college and all the experience that he had. But, yes, he's one of the best that I seen fielding.
Hmm. When was the last time you were in Cleveland? What's it like for you to be here now? Like, I'm sure when you were at the Nationals weekend, that had to be insane for you.
Yeah, it was great to reconnect with people. You know, having been here for a while, I think it's been like 4 or 5 years. But I've been in the game a lot. You know, I've been teaching a lot of clinics, being in touch with kids and teaching the game, the fundamentals of the game. I think is what my passion is, work in this kind of environment. And it's been great, man. Just came from Venezuela. I was an ambassador for a summer league that they have going on in there. It was great. We're trying to bring more people into the ballpark. And the league was a great success, and we are planning to growing it a little bit more next year. So it was amazing. It's been really good, and I'm happy that I get to be here. I'm going to be at the game on Thursday and Friday and probably, you know, share some stories with people. And if I have a chance to run into people, maybe take pictures and sign autographs. So it's going to be exciting.
I remember one great giveaway that the Indians had for you. And I have a picture at home of you with Dave Concepcion and me. You were on the you and Dave was in because you guys had a dual bobblehead, you know, together.
Yeah, and you guys kicked me out of the chair. We were in front of the dugout.
Yeah, you got out of there. It was great. Thank you. And I have this picture, and it's really cool. You and Dave Concepcion and talking with me, and you told me then Dave was kind of your idol, and his idol was Louis Aparicio, and the string of Venezuelan shortstops who were really, really good. Mm-hmm. Your position is a big deal in Venezuela. You're from Caracas.
Yes.
Brian Rocchio is from Caracas now here. Do you have any ties to Brian, and what have you thought of his game, especially from a defensive standpoint?
I don't have any ties with him, but I follow him last year since he played with the champions in Venezuela. You know, he represented the Tiburones de la Guaira, which is the team that got the championship. And the plays that this kid made on the field was amazing. I started following him last year and say, wow, who is this kid with? And then I realized he was with the Guardians. And, you know, since then I've been following the first half that he has. Was really good, making plays all over. And the combination with Jimenez, you know, it was amazing to see. I saw some double plays that they sent me on highlights. And it's like, wow, it looked like Robbie and Omar out there. So, you know.
That's high praise.
Yeah, it's very good. You know, I'm really want to get to know him a little bit more. But he got some great tools.
Omar Vizquel is with us in studio. You can stick around for a little bit.
Sure.
Omar, joining us right here on Baskin and Phelps. This is great. Great to have you, Euro.
Nice.
All right, hang on. Before you get into this, I want to tell one quick story.
Oh, good.
So, I don't know if Omar remembers this or not. So, Omar, when we were in the media and we were traveling with Fox, we were in the middle. And then Omar, like the last couple of years you were with us, you were like the only veteran that would kind of sit in the middle of the plane. Remember, all the other veterans would sit in the back. Mm-hmm. You would sit in the middle. I don't know if you remember this or not. And I sat in front of you. Do you know where I'm going with this?
You kicked his chair all the time?
Did you kick his chair?
No. So there was a time we were on the runway, and all of a sudden I heard, I don't know if I can recreate the sound, Aaron, but you would hear this. And I was like, man, it sounds like something is underneath me in baggage claim. In baggage underneath, under the bulkhead. What's it called?
Plane, yeah.
Under the plane. And I'm like, what's going on? And I would hear this, and it was like someone was underneath my seat knocking, and I'm like, oh my God, what if one of the guys that puts the baggage underneath is stuck underneath?
Only you would go there.
Well, so now I got worried, and I'm like, nah, I didn't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden, the plane starts to take off, and it's like. And I'm like, oh my God, someone's under there, and I didn't say anything, and someone's going to be underneath me. And if they die, they were trying to get help, and I didn't help them. And Christine, I don't know if you remember, it was Christine from Continental Airlines. So she was so nice. And I called Christine over. I go, Christine, I think somebody's stuck.
I know where this is going.
Underneath. And she's like, what? And so she looked panicked. And all of a sudden, you stood up behind me, and you put your hand in the middle of the seat, and you're like, ah, gotcha. And I was like, I felt so bad. I was like, oh my God, someone's underneath me and they're dying right now because we're going up in the air.
Another clubhouse joke. We're full of those.
That and you used to do cat calls. So you'd think there was a plane. After you did that, then every once in a while you'd be like, meow.
It sounded like a flat tire when the flat tire start rolling. Bah, 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 bah.
That's funny. Before we get into the Guardians this year a little bit, if there was a guy who had a career that he probably wasn't supposed to have, it might have been you.
Yeah.
Little guy.
Why is that?
Well, you tell me.
Thanks for the confidence.
No, but think about this.
Because you were destined to be the hero of Butte, Montana for the rest of your life.
Yeah. You're 17 years old from mm-hmm. Venezuela.
Yes.
And you sign with Seattle. And they stick you at the age of 17 in Butte, Montana, and wish you luck.
Yes.
Here's the Berkeley Pit. Good
and
luck.
What, 20 years later, you've 30 years later, you retire from baseball, basically.
Yeah.
Omar, how the hell did that happen?
A lot of people didn't expect that either. When I signed, I remember I got a bonus for $2,500.
Congratulations.
And,
that would be a long way.
Yes, man. It was crazy. And then, I flew to America and...
Had never been here?
With a lot of hope.
Had you ever been here?
No, never before. And, my dream was to become a professional baseball player. Then I knew how to act around baseball players because I played baseball all my life, of course, but I never had the opportunity to be in a professional team. And then I knew that it was going to be a lot of hard work. Listen to some of the major leaguers that came from Venezuela speak about their experience and stuff. Not like nowadays. Now you see them in every social media and all that. But it was very small when you hear one of those guys speak and listen to the experiences. But, I wanted to become one of them. I wanted to be a major leaguer. And all I have to do is work extra. Maybe twice as much as the American people, because sometimes you get lost in translation. And you are little and you don't speak the language. You don't hit home runs. But all you have to do is work hard, behave, follow instructions, and then see where that can take you. And when I, in 89, when I make it to the Seattle Mariners, to the Major League team.
At the age of 22.
21. I was 21 years old. And Ken Griffey Jr. Was there with me. It was amazing. I realized that I worked my ass off to get to where I wanted to be and, took pride of that and all the advices that my parents gave me and all the coaches and everybody that helped me throughout my career. So great.
You were always in phenomenal shape, but did you ever expect to play until you were 45 years old?
No,
never. Did as a position player, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, I took it year by year. Every year was a challenge to me. And then every year I wanted to become a better player. I knew there were a lot of great, great people in front of me, a lot of decisions to make. And I wanted to be on that team. I wanted to be on the roster. And that's why I give everything to baseball. I mean, to any team. And in the beginning with the Seattle Mariners, and then when I got traded, it was very emotional to me because I was with Seattle all my career. I played 5 years in the minor leagues with them and then five in the big leagues. And then I got traded to the Indians. And, I was very emotional. But I realized that I was moving up to a different team, to a team that had the opportunity to be in the playoff in the World Series. And that's what happened. I came to, a better organization, met a lot of more friends, more Latinos in that team. And then when I got to spring training, I knew the opportunity and the potential that we have to be on the World Series and to win it.
You were a perfect fit on those teams, and John Hart knew it, which is why he traded for you, because there was tons of offense, and he knew he had to get a gold glove at shortstop, and he did that. The shortstop position has changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally think it's changed for the better. There's such an emphasis on offense at shortstop, and maybe even in years gone by with A-Rod and Cal Ripken and Derek Jeter and guys like that. Has it taken away from the shortstop position, the beauty of the position, the way you played it, the way that other guys who could absolutely pick it played the position? Or is it okay what's happened to that spot?
No, I think the value more on the offensive side now. There is a shortstop with power numbers now, and the values that they have, the height of the players. You don't see many shortstop now that are little. Even though that the ultimate goal at shortstop is to take ground balls and make the play. Otherwise, you're not going to be a winner. But, the evaluation of some of these kids now, I don't know if I would have a chance to sign these days.
Really?
Yeah, because, they ask a particular height or power, and the projection that they have for these guys is supposed to be a power position. So, we see a lot of those guys' talks now on the, on the workouts and on when the scouts come, they look more at the tall guy and they try to go that way instead of get the guy that have the best hands. So I seen it a lot. I've been working a lot with, you know, academies when that's what they're trying to look. Even though you have a guy with good hands, maybe they move it to second base or, you know, they caught you. They say, no, we need to give this guy a chance because he's taller than you. He might be more power than you. And then, you know, you end up not being signed by a particular team.
Oh, do you like where the game is now? Sped up, clock. It seems more fan-friendly, but is it better for the game?
It's hard sometimes to look at a baseball game on the TV and, you know, sit down with all the rules that we have to get used to now. Obviously, we have to adjust because this is where the game is moving and is evolving into. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to accept it. I was at shortstop turning double plays where guys were trying to kill you around the base. And now,
that's honest.
Somebody has to slide in front of you. And, you know, they give you the shot to turn the double play. And then, yeah, go ahead and finish the play. And then the bases are bigger.
And, but you were never scared, right?
You have to get that out of your mind because otherwise you're not going to be able to turn double plays. If you're scared, you're only going to get one out all the time. So one of the reasons why I am leading shortstop in double plays right now at this moment is because we never afraid to turn a double play. We were never afraid to get hit. And that's how you adjust to that particular period of time where – guys were coming to, you know, to get your legs. But, you know, I guess it's the way that we're moving on. The fans like it, you know, player security. They're not going to get hurt because of these plays anymore. The catchers are the same way. You can't just get an impact with the catcher. And I think it's good for the game. You know, the family seems to enjoy it. And then the time is getting shorter. And I think that's what people wanted.
Kevin Franson was on with us yesterday. We were just talking to him, and he was when you set the record with the Giants, he was on the other side of that, right? I think he was at second.
I turned some double plays with Kevin. Good guy to have around. Funny guy.
Oh, he's really – we had him on yesterday. He was hysterical. Yeah.
He was funny. Mm-hmm. The teams you played on here in Cleveland, I mean, you guys were loaded, and everybody knew it, and you were expected to do big things. This Guardians team, I think, has caught people by surprise because if you just look at – you know, the names on the roster, nobody expected to be tied for the best record in baseball here at the last day of July. How does a team like that come together, Omar? And because this team has had to play the game the right way and do all the little things and everything else, but I still think it's stunning that this team is where it is right now.
And I think it's better that way. I think it's better that you don't have those two or three guys that are like the big a star that everybody talk about, you know, like in past, you have Lindors and, you know, all those guys. Now you have Jose Ramirez, who is a guy that is very humble. You have the Naylor brothers who are, you know, very down to earth. You know, you have a very great team that don't have those egos like going over the top, you know. And I believe those are the kind of teams that get to the finals and play well. They have a great group of guys. You see him playing on TV. They look like a bunch of rookie guys, but they get the job done. I mean, they beat everybody. They beat the Yankees. They beat the Orioles. We're going to have a great series this weekend where they're going to compete with these guys. And I really, you know, appreciate the way that they've been running these teams since the minor league. You know, you're asking me how do they do it? Well, they know each other. They play each other from little leagues together, double A, triple A. They know how to play as a team. And, you know, they play hard. And it's great to see those kind of guys, you know, the Jimenez, the Rocchios, and Ramirez, and, you know, Kawan, all those guys coming from the organization and then doing their job and being on the top.
Did you feel like you were a superstar here? I like to me, everybody on that team was a superstar. I mean, you look.
Well,
one
I wasn't.
I
wasn't one of the superstars. You know, you take a look at the lineup. You know, Bell, Lofton, Baerga, Sandy Alomar, Gene Tomy, Manny Ramirez. You know, if you look at the superstars, those are superstar names. I wasn't even close to that, but I was able to, you know, be part of that puzzle where, you know, we turn double plays, we make the plays, we help out the pitchers, and then, like, you know, like you say, I fit perfectly on that lineup. So, you know, that's what I stay here for so long.
Yeah, but you can be humble. You were a superstar here, whether you want to believe
Absolutely.
It or not. I'm telling you. So if you want to believe that or
buddy.
Not. And it didn't matter what you were doing at the plate. Because everybody else, you know, that didn't matter. Like, I just, you know, just being a part of the community and understanding what was going on here and then being a part of something, you know, especially when the Browns were gone and that ballpark was packed every night. And, you know, You guys were Hollywood celebrities, and you wanted to be in Cleveland at the time, at least. Maybe Albert didn't at one point, but you know, it's just you guys wanted to be here, and the fans totally. You had to feel that embracing from the fans.
Oh yeah, no yeah. Every day was great to be here. You go to a restaurant, you go to the movies, you go to a mall. People just look at you as you know as heroes, and you know, of course, role models, and we love it. You know, we love it. I think people really got together and feel that chemistry between the community and the players. And when you have that, man, you got success. We were, you know, selling out games every day for years, and you can see how people enjoy being in Cleveland.
Can you have a different perspective of Mike Hargrove now than you did when you were a player and what he was able to do?
Yes. I mean, I speak with Mike every time I see it and say, Mike, I mean, maybe as a player those days, we didn't realize how great of a job you did of getting everybody together and going into the same direction and pulling into the same directions and trying to handle all those egos and all the guys that were on the team. And, you know, we were winning games and we probably didn't see that at the time. And, you know, every time that I see him, I hug him and say, man, thank you for being that person, that guy, you know, that we look up for us to take us, you know, beyond winning.
You have 20 more minutes?
Yes, sir.
Omar Vizquel with us next segment right here on Baskin and Phelps. I'm Jeff Phelps. My partner is Andy Baskin. Omar, you said something early when I asked you about watching you guys in spring training, you and John McDonald, and you said John had his way of doing things. We had the Latino way of fielding ground balls and working on ground balls. What is that? What do you mean by that?
The Latino way is simple. We just fluently go after a ball without thinking too much about technique. And I think you develop this rhythm of fielding. And when you see probably American guys fielding, they always think about putting a feet here, the hands here, the shoulders here. So they go after a technique. And I think we are a little bit more fluidly on that aspect of the game. That is one way to describe it.
So just get to it. It doesn't matter if your foot's in the right place.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You just try to feel the ball with elegance, I will call it, and try to have soft hands to it. When in the other American mind, maybe with infielders, they're trying to put a foot here and then trying to reproduce everything that is being taught to you. It's more technical, I would say, more technical. That's the only difference.
Hmm. Oh, what's next? Where are we in life right now? Because obviously, and we've had you on the show before, we've talked about things that have happened, and I don't really feel like going back down that road, but I just, where are you in life? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do?
Well,
by the way, I just said in the break, I said, you're what, 55, 50? And Omar said he's 57. Andy, he looks 35.
Yeah.
57
Wait,
years
which
old.
One of us is 57, Jeff?
That'd be you.
Yeah, thank you.
57's in my rearview mirror. I swear, Omar, you look like you could go out.
Thank you.
Out
thank
and play.
You very much.
You could go play.
Well, right now, I am doing a lot of different things. You know, I'm teaching kids in schools. I'm part of academies that invite me to do private sections with infielders. We are speaking the world baseball in a lot of different parts of the country. We've been invited to a lot of events, you know, in different occasions. So, you know, I'm going around different places and speaking the baseball, the fundamentals, you know, how my experiences and how to to become a professional baseball player, basically. And as you know, my last 3 years, I got involved in a couple of problems with my ex-wife, first of all, and then with a worker in the Chicago White Sox. And, I learned a lot from those mistakes. I didn't really was charged or I had to pay the price for any of these because they didn't have evidence or anything. I mean, it was more like blowing out of proportion, but obviously hurt my image a little bit. And, I'm speaking with a lot of people freely about this. I have nothing to hide.
Every question we've asked you, you've answered. I mean, it's not like...
Yeah, I want to speak it up because a lot of people kind of, got a different version of it. I couldn't really speak much about it, but I'm speaking more. I'm more open about these issues. And like I said, I would like to apologize to people that I hurt. It wasn't my intention really to hurt these people, but we make mistakes, and we obviously wants to be clear with all these problems. But I'm good. I'm having a good time right now. Those problems are kind of like in the past now. I could solve it, and we speak about it, and I'm happy. I find a new partner in my life. I live in Houston, Texas. And, I'm still open to do a lot of baseball activities and just waiting for the chance to be in professional baseball again.
And Hall of Fame, if it ever happens,
you were
so close.
We've campaigned
so
like
close.
Crazy.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame, as you know, we don't have any more saying about it. We put our numbers. They compare to the guys that are in there already. I'm happy to the way that I finished my career. And hopefully, the voters can recap again and think about the numbers again, and maybe get another chance. I still have 3 years left in the voting, so let's be patient and see what happened with that.
Do you think it was important that you went to San Francisco after playing here for so long? Because I remember when you left, and I was like, oh, man, and people would say about the Hall of Fame, and they would say, like, look, you might be bummed that he's leaving Cleveland, but it's an opportunity for him to go play in the National League and let the National League writers see what we saw for years.
Yes.
And so, I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, I saw it as a positive. I always wonder what you thought about your time in the National League after.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great exposure because I played all my career in the American League, and then after 14, 15 years that I played here in the American League, I went to San Francisco, which I got two more Gold Gloves there, and people got to see a little bit of my game. So, yeah, it opened a different window, and, a lot of guys got to see my game, and, I was happy that I played there.
You got them in a closet. You have them packed up. All those Gold Gloves, where are they?
Yeah, where are the
Gold
Gloves?
Yes, I have 8 Gold Gloves in my house. One of them is on my dad's, on my family house in Venezuela. And, it's a great, I have a great display in my house.
Yeah, I bet.
Very nice. People that go to my house always want to take pictures there.
Yeah, I bet.
And one of their favorite places to go in the house. So, it's pretty cool.
Guardians are in first place. We didn't think that. I don't know if anybody thought that. Looking at the roster, as we talked about earlier, here's the trade deadline. They needed an outfielder. They get an outfielder. Mm-hmm. They needed a starting pitcher. They get a starting pitcher, a guy who hasn't pitched this year but does have a track record, and we'll see if he's able to help. Just making moves. What does that do in the clubhouse to the veterans who have been competing like crazy, trying to win, a division, get into the postseason, to see the front office go out and make some moves to supplement the major league team?
Well, it tells the team that they're right into it. They want to win. They want to go all the way. It shows you how they prepare and the pieces that they need to finish the whole team together. And it gives you great hope that you can just go to the next step with the guys that they need and what they get. So, it's great. I was surprised that in years before they didn't make a move. And they realize that, hey, maybe we just need to get a couple of guys here, veteran guys that can help us out. And they did it. So, it's going to be great. It's going to be a good finish for them.
I think it's something interesting has happened in baseball recently. And tell me if I'm wrong on this. The Guardians have numerous guys who play multiple positions now. Mm-hmm. And it seems like there are more of those guys around Major League Baseball who are playing, you know, and not just like a utility guy at the end of the bench, but a guy who tonight he's playing second, next night he's playing in left field. Is that something that's being taught now in the minor league level to develop this, and is it good for a team? I would think it's good for a manager and a roster.
No, it is being taught, at least on the teams that I was part of it. They are encouraging these young guys that they don't only play one position, that they can you can move to a different side of the infield, or maybe you can go even back in the outfield and try to defend and learn the position. Because that's going to be better for you. That's going to give you a better opportunity for you to be part of a roster. And then you're going to be able to play like in tough games and give you that another dimension. So for the manager, it's great to have these kind of guys that play multiple positions. And if you can dominate that, that's even better. Your value as a player grow, and it's great to have guys like this.
Mm. Oh, I know you guys were kind of talking about it a little bit, but if you're a young shortstop, whether it's in Venezuela or the United States, and what do you think the challenges, and you said you've been working with these kids, what are those challenges now, especially like the Venezuelan kids that are trying to come up here? And, I mean, you're like, we're dealing with it with NIL, with the college right now. Mm-hmm. And now we're also dealing with it in NIL in high school, right? Because now you can get paid money to go play in high schools in different states, not Ohio. What are the different challenges that you're seeing for them, maybe even compared to when you were playing?
Well, a lot of competition, not only a shortstop, but in every position. Like I said, if you can play more than one position, it's even better. But I think the biggest challenge is try to show all your tools at once. You know, you field in a ground ball, throw hard to first base, then try to steal a base. And then when you take in an at-bat, try to show your power. You know, give him all the things that you do, and that you have, and then you're going to have a better chance to be in a roster.
But like here, I think, and I kind of watched it firsthand too, that in some ways we're burning out kids here in the States because, you know, we dress them like major leaguers by the time they're 2 years old. Parents are investing thousands of dollars into these kids. You're traveling all over the country. You're traveling every weekend. And it's just constant. The kids that love the game, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But there might be players there that we might be burning out. And then, you know.
Although in Venezuela, you play baseball like crazy, right? All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
Was it constant coaching, or was it going out and playing with your friends?
You can't really push a kid to do something that he doesn't want to do. You know, you got to let him do and be free mentally to enjoy the game, because you start pushing all these things, all these workouts and tours and things that they don't want to do. They also want to spend time, you know, with their friends. They want to be on the lake. They want to play video games. And they want to do their things too. But if you try to push too much into the game, then they're going to get bored and they're not going to want to be on the field anymore. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of parents. They want their kids to become star at a young age. You know, let him bloom. Let him bloom naturally. Let him enjoy the game. And, you know, that then you will see the results.
Do you think you could have been a professional boxer, too? Or is there another sport you think you could have played?
Yeah. Boxing was one of the sports that I love. I thought that I was good at it. You know, obviously, I didn't encourage anybody to do it. But I had the possibility to do it and, you know, decided to go to baseball.
All right. Riddle me this one. You're the perfect guy to ask this question. Guardians just drafted number one overall, a second baseman, Travis Bezzana. From all reports, he's a second baseman. Mm-hmm. Maybe he can play the outfield, but he's a second baseman.
Yeah.
We've got the best defensive second base baseball right now in Andrés Giménez, who you talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. You leave him at second, you move him back to shortstop, which is his natural position. What would you do?
Giménez already have a reputation of being one of the best fielders in the game and as a second baseman, so there is no reason for him to be moved. You know, but this kid, this new prospect now, I just met him yesterday.
Did you? I was at Lake County.
Yeah, I was at Lake County yesterday.
We nice did
a
kid.
Meet and greet with the fans. It was a great, great moments that we were there. Great kid.
You had two good accents and going there. Yours and his Australian. That had to be fun.
And he looked so strong, man, to be a second baseman. He looked like a catcher. You know, you met him and you stretch his hand. It's like, wow, this kid is a second baseman. So it shows you the kind of players, how they develop so fast with all these weight programs that are in place and how the guys are prepared just to go into a big league anytime. And I'm sure these guys is going to be moving position. You know, he's very strong. I didn't see him taking ground balls, but, you know, he had two at-bats in the minor leagues, and he hit one opposite way against the wall. I mean, you can tell the guy's got extremely power. So he had the potential to be moved to a different position. Obviously, his bat is very alive. Maybe outfielder, maybe third baseman. Who knows?
Okay. Yeah. Right. But you would leave Jimenez at second base?
Yes.
He's that good.
You won't move that guy. That guy have to be there.
All right. That's outstanding. We can't thank you enough. It's always great to be able to talk to you and for you to come in and sit with us for an hour. We really, really appreciate it.
Omar, real quick, anything you want fans to know today?
No. You know.
You were out of Lake County yesterday.
Yeah, I
was in Lake County yesterday. Tomorrow and Friday, I'll be at the game, you know, probably shaking some hands and taking some pictures. That'd be fun. It'd be fun to reconnect with fans again and, you know, to enjoy the game. It'd be great.
Great to see you, buddy.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, guys, very much. Appreciate it.
Omar Vizquel, Indians legend, right here in studio. If you missed this interview and our conversation with Omar, well, shame on you.